relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
Literal sense, history is watching. History is watching. Just like history watched 3 years ago on January 6th. Yeah. When insurrectionists stormed this very Capitol and placed a dagger to the throat of American democracy. Many of you are here on that darkest of days. We all saw with our own eyes the insurrectionists were not patriots. They'd come to stop the peaceful transfer of power, to overturn the will of the people. January 6th lies about the 2020 election and the plots to steal the election posed a great, gravest threat to U.S. democracy since the Civil War. But they failed.
The greatest threat to, I thought we were a republic, democracy since the Civil War, really? That was allegedly the state of the nation, or rather, as my colleague Rob Schmidt at Newsmax called it, the hate of the nation. What is the reality? And what is the right way to describe politics in America and in our civilization today? I'm very excited about this one-on-one because it's with somebody who I highly respect, a Renaissance mind, an individual who represented the best of what investigative journalism was, if it ever existed, at least today, and now is the CEO of Zenga News. He's the author of numerous titles, Mastermind about KSM, the man behind 9/11, Losing Bin Laden, Disinformation, Shadow War, and Leading from Behind on a certain former senator from Illinois. Rich Miniter, welcome in studio.
Oh, well, nice.
So let's take the State of the Union as our apropos for talking about the state of the nation or politics in America. There are those who say it's never been so divisive. There are others who say, well, do you remember when they were spitting on our GIs coming back from Vietnam? Could you put it into a more accurate, less hysterical context? What is the body? What is the state of the body politic in the Republic today, Rich?
First of all, you have to realize that Biden and the people around him use the same words that you and I do, but they have a different dictionary. Those words have different meanings. So as a strict historical fact, the January 6th riots, insurrection, call, everyone has a different name for this. I would say violent demonstration. Whatever that was, it wasn't the gravest threat to the Republic. I mean, we had in 1957, for example, Puerto Rican separatists got into armed conflict in the under the Capitol Dome, shot members of Congress, shot at staff and shot and seriously wounded, I believe killed, Capitol Hill policemen. That is easily far worse than this. As far as I'm aware, the only person who died as direct action from January 6th was one of the unarmed protesters. And I'm not sitting here in judgment. I think to be a Capitol Hill cop on the other side of that breaking glass could be terrifying. Adrenaline makes idiots of us all. People make bad decisions. Nonetheless, she was the only one killed. So what is all this? So this new dictionary, this way of phrasing things, what Biden is really talking about is an establishment that has been in power for a very long time that now feels frightened. When they say it's the greatest threat to democracy, they essentially mean it's the greatest threat to the Democratic Party, but it's bigger than the Democratic Party. There is an establishment that exists in America outside of elections, outside of great wealth, that perpetuates itself generationally and that insulates itself from accountability. And so there really are two classes in America. Not rich, poor, black, white, urban, rural.
Left, right.
These are all classic ways of dividing our politics. I'm not saying they don't have any value. They absolutely do. But the real division is between the insulated and the accountable. The accountable and the non-accountable.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
I invited you back in studio because of that observation you made over cigars a few days ago, and I want to unpack it at length because I think it's so incredibly trenchant. Can I just first do a little detour on this entrenched interest group that is threatened by a return of President Trump? Many have labeled it the deep state. I think that doesn't quite capture what we're talking about, because you look at the decisions from Fannie Willis to Jack Smith and so on. This isn't covert. This isn't behind the scenes. It's an in-your-face state. Can you talk to us beyond the accountability and the unaccountable? Is deep state a word that is shouldn't be used, doesn't express what we're talking about, is unfortunate? I mean, in Turkey, it makes sense, but here?
Yeah, in the Turkish context, it's the idea that the bureaucracy is deeply secular. So even if a religious leader that did represent the majority of Turks were elected, the bureaucracy would fight him. And that's essentially what Donald Trump seems to mean when he talks about the deep state. But the problem isn't just an unelected, unfireable civil servant class. That's a piece of a larger puzzle. Why do... like, say, last week's decision in the Fannie Willis case, why did Judge McAfee feel the need to essentially coordinate with the interests of the party that rules his county, Fulton County, Georgia? Well, yes, he had a primary challenger, and he had an election in 60 days. And this is why the founders were a little bit skeptical of elected judges. It makes it hard for ordinary people to be fearless.
Yeah.
And justice sometimes requires fearlessness, as To Kill a Mockingbird shows quite well. But why did he feel the need to coordinate with the interests of a political party? Because the political parties in many jurisdictions in the United States, especially the big cities, have become insulated from accountability. They know that courts will not remove them because judges are afraid of them. They know that the system will largely be in their favor unless they do something truly well-documented, such as on video, that is truly and obviously without any good explanation. Unless they screw up in such a public and undeniable way, they will be protected. And that is the corruption of any system. And this happens in all one-party states, right? So I would be somewhat skeptical of the decisions in Wyoming and Idaho, which are essentially one-party Republican yes. states. It's not the R or the D that matters. It's whether you feel free as a judge to recognize the facts for what they are and render the decision that those facts naturally take you to. It's whether you, it's this whole in the corporate HR departments, protected versus unprotected classes. They actually do this.
Yeah.
This is a term of art in that business. So the danger of protecting politicians is particularly insidious because we elect them. We put them into power to be accountable to us, the voters. They are the very people who should never be insulated.
We'll talk about accountable and unaccountable in a second, but do we have to first jettison left and right as taxonomies? Are they past their sell-by date?
I think they're past their sell-by date because in American politics, we're really talking about two flavors of liberalism. We're talking about a broadly classical liberal versus a left-liberal debate, right? And it has... And calling people far right in an attempt to connect them to the National Socialist German Workers' Party is an ideology, aside from a few people in remote rural areas or in prisons, that no American shares in any significant number, right? That is just not helpful, right? It doesn't actually describe the views of people on the ground.
We're talking to Rich Minetta, CEO of Zenger News, Z-E-N-G-E-R, Zenger.news. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First One-on-One, coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. If you enjoy the deep dive with special guests, real experts like Rich and newsmakers, make sure you never miss any of our long-form interviews. Subscribe to the podcast, whichever platform you prefer, matters not which to me. You can go to Salem, you can go to Apple, Spotify, Stitcher. Plug in my name, Sebastian Gorka, America First. Leave us a five-star review and share the links with your friends. Likewise, if 3 hours a day is simply not enough with me, then check out our Patriots Alaska cruise this July 4th weekend, especially for those of you who missed our trip to Israel. We took 350 of our dearest listeners to the Holy Land. It was incredible. This trip is a little bit closer to home, June 29th to July 6th in the most beautiful state of the Union. Check out the itinerary at sebgorka.com. Book your cabin today. Make a reservation. Already 280 of you have done so. Don't miss out on this trip to have the opportunity to talk to me over an extended period and meet hundreds of like-minded Americans who love this country just as much as you do. That's S-E-B-G-O-R-K-A, sebgorka.com, and the Patriots Alaska Cruise banner. And if you want prosperity and security back, if you'd like to have a nation with borders, then tell the world for the next 8 months who you stand by. It is the I Stand With 45 flag, Trump 2024. Get yours today and all your America First gear on our website. The latest T-shirt, I think it's the most important thing we've ever put up there, is a photograph of Laken, not Lincoln, Laken Riley, with a very simple phrase, say her name. Get everything, all of my books as well, at sebgorkastore.com. That's S-E-B-G-O-R-K-A, sebgorkastore.com. And you can support the president directly at DonaldJTrump.com. Greetings, this is Dr. Sebastian Gorka from the Midas Gold Group War Room. The MAGA veterans at Midas point out that the Federal Reserve note does not belong to you. It belongs to the Federal Reserve Bank. While the federal debt doesn't belong to the Federal Reserve Bank, it belongs to you. This is your wake-up call to what the Midas Gold Group veterans believe the central bank and government are trying to do, a controlled demolition of our current system with a central bank digital currency to take complete and utter control of our transactional freedoms, a literal digital concentration camp replete with social sanctions. Protect yourself. Turn this wake-up call into a phone call and look into the opportunities that gold can provide you as a way to diversify your investments. Call veteran-owned Midas Gold Group today, 855-322-GOLD, or go to MidasGoldGroup.com. That's 855-322-GOLD, or just go to MidasGoldGroup.com. Always faithful, Midas Gold Group, MAGA and proud of it.
On that spring morning, I wore a shirt that got right to the point. There are only two genders. My principal pulled me out of class. I was told that people were complaining about the words on my shirt. It was enough to silence my speech. I was told that I would need to change my shirt before I could return to class. Rather than respecting my right to free speech, officials chose to censor me. That's why, with the help of Alliance Defending Freedom and the Massachusetts Family Institute, we filed a lawsuit calling on the court to hold my school accountable for violating my constitutional freedoms.
That young man is 12 years old. He was punished in his high school in Middlesbrough, Massachusetts, for wearing the shirt that simply said, there are two genders. His First Amendment rights ended when he stepped inside of that public school. That's wrong. That's against the Constitution. But who's going to fight for him? Well, thanks to the Alliance Defending Freedom, they are suing that school authority, and if necessary, just like Jack the Cake Baker, they're going to represent Liam all the way up to the Supreme Court. But they can't do it without your help. Why? Because ADF doesn't charge their clients a penny. Will you support Liam and his case? Make a generous gift today at my website, sebgorka.com, by clicking on the Stand With ADF banner. $100 today can make such a difference, because next time it could be your rights that are trampled upon. Please call in your donation. It is tax deductible, 855-374-4767, or go to my website. That number again, 855-374-4767, or just go to S-E-B-G-O-R-K-A, sebgorka.com, and the Stand With ADF banner. Okay, so let's unpack this incredibly convincing new description of politics. And I don't think it's just in the US. If you look at Brexit, if you look at Maloney, if you look at Milei, there's this new trend that kind of denies old categorization. So talk to us about who the unaccountables and the accountables are, Richard.
Let me first talk to you about this trend. So, yes, yeah. Outside the United States, you see this in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, the UK. But outside the English-speaking world, you see this across the continent of Europe. And you see it in dimmer reflection in emerging democracies as well. And what we've seen over the last 50 years, and 1968, especially in Europe, was really the turning point, is that the working class, which had reflected and supported center-left political parties, and in the case of France, for example, the Communist Party, that began to shift after 1968. And that's a whole longer explanation as to why, but basically in 1968, in France especially, but also in Europe and in the United States, there were demonstrations and political demands by predominantly college-educated people, people with advanced degrees, which came across as anti-police and anti-patriotic. And people forget that in the 1968 Democratic Convention in Chicago, the police beating the protesters in many working-class communities in Chicago and across the United States, the police were the heroes and not the villains in that story.
Yeah.
And so the whole defund the police movement that we hear today is an echo of those times, which shows that the most educated, most politically active people in our society forget nothing and learn nothing.
Well, isn't there a direct, distinct line to be drawn between, you know, the days of rage in Chicago, Students for a Democratic Society, and Obama, and defund the police and the squad today? I mean, it's not an accident. Bill Ayers is a buddy with Obama.
Right. So I'm just saying these are broad cultural movements, which present the themes and ideas over and over to the public. And when the public votes no, 1972, 49 states for Richard Nixon, probably the worst politician in American history. I do not understand people who found a newfound respect for this mendacious human being, brilliant as some say he is. You simply can't do some of the things that Nixon did. But nonetheless, 49% of the public who had voted no on him in 1960, 49 states voted, overwhelming percentage, voted for Nixon in 1972. Why? Because he was on the side of law and order. And people forget the largest protest in terms of bodies was in 1967 before Chicago, which was a pro-Vietnam War demonstration. It was called the Hard Hats Revolt. And these were construction workers who were tired of seeing the American flag burned. Now, unfortunately, it got violent toward the end there, as things did in the 60s. The boomers were younger and more violent people. But the hard hats, much bigger than any of the anti-war demonstrations.
Right.
And they wanted to win. So that's the beginning of this class divide. 50 years later, you see that this divide is very sharp, right? So typically, this analysis is along economic lines. The college-educated think this, the working class think that. And the challenge for center-left parties, the Democratic Party in the United States, the Social Democrats in Germany, and so on, the challenge is how do they get more working-class votes? That's usually how this is framed. But that's actually not what's driving the so-called working class. The people there are not, they don't hate people who go to college. In fact, they send many of their children to college. They're not anti-education. It is that unaccountable people in any walk of life make bad decisions. What if there were a state in which no doctor ever lost his medical license for malpractice? Would anyone have surgery in that state? We intuitively know that accountability produces better results. Right? That's why we watch football games with referees. That's why we have judges in court, not a wrestling match between the prosecutor and the defense attorney. Right?
And this label of populism, likewise, is, A, it's pejoratively used, but it doesn't really get to the heart of the issue, does it?
No, it's that a large section of the public, perhaps the majority in the recent elections in Europe, it seems to be the majority, are people who want leaders to make decisions that reflect their will, that hold people accountable. And that isn't happening. And so for a while, the establishment can fend them off. But as we saw in Italy, you know, Meloni was a dramatic sea change. The elections in Portugal a few weeks ago, the elections in Germany, and so on. We're seeing a desire for accountability, not just simply in the Netherlands, not just simply to make environmental rules, for example, that put a large chunk of the population out of work or force higher food prices on them, but a balance between the concerns of the insulated class and themselves. And they're starting to realize that the class that makes decisions isn't taking their needs into account at all. So when people talk about distrust of the system, it's this sudden revelation that comes to people at different points in their lives, mm-hmm. that they, where they say, oh my gosh, they're not thinking about me at all. This happens to suburban mothers in Northern Virginia school districts where they say, wait, they're showing naked people to my five-year-old? Yeah. Or they're talking about this kind of bedroom activity to my five-year-old? Like, how could someone make such a decision, they say, right? And then they discover how people who are on the school board are married to people in the teachers' unions, right? And in fact, the teachers' unions support their school board elections, right? So they see, there's no accountability here. With account of the, when Biden talks about the end of democracy, when people on in his White House talk about the end of democracy, what they're really talking about is the fear of the return of accountability.
Right.
What if to make a decision you have to consider everyone in the room, not just your ideological friends? You make different decisions.
Yeah. We're talking to the CEO of the new service, Zenga. Please check it out at zenga.news. And if you want to follow us for our breaking news and coverage, make sure you look for Seb Gorka on all the usual social media platforms, from Truth Social to X, Facebook, Parler, Telegram. You can watch our show on your Roku, your Fire Stick, or just download the Salem News Channel app. And for unique content by me and direct access to me, check out my writings at my Substack, sebastiangorka.substack.com. That's my whole name as one word, sebastiangorka.substack.com. How do you feel? I feel great. And one of the reasons I believe I feel better is because I take Balance of Nature's fruits and vegetables in a capsule. Balance of Nature receives over 1,000 success stories every single month from hundreds of thousands of customers who've purchased billions of capsules of their fruits and vegetables over the past 20 years. You should check it all out on their website. Their products are gluten-free and non-GMO, and they contain no added sugars or synthetics. If you're looking for something to make you feel better naturally, you should definitely try Balance of Nature today. Whether you order online or call them direct, you must use the promo code GORKA to get this special offer of 35% off. Call them on 800-2468-751 and use discount code GORKA, or order online at balanceofnature.com. Use discount code GORKA to get 35% off. If you enjoy what we provide for you here on America First, then support those who make it possible. We aren't NPR. We don't get $500 million of your taxpayer money every year. This is a free market enterprise made possible by great patriots like Mike Lindell. Mike Lindell is the inventor of the MyPillow, the pillow that never gets hot, never loses shape. There's a reason he sold 81 million of them. However, he's got hundreds of items on his website made by Americans in America for you. The left detests him because he's a conservative. He loves America and he's friends with President Trump. Let's have his back. Don't buy that Chinese tat on Amazon. Go to MyPillow.com. Get up to 2/3 off with my name and free shipping. You can call them up and talk to a human being. How nice is that? 800-829-8468. That's MyPillow.com. 800-829-8468, but you've got to use the secret code, G-O-R-K-A. Okay, cut 16, please, Eric.
I mean, if you look at some of these exit polls, I mean, I live in Virginia. Immigration was the number one issue. Yes. I mean, again, these could change in Virginia.
Well, Virginia does have a border with West Virginia. Very contested area.
But you're thinking, like, what?
Is that a good example, Eric, of is that a good example, Rich, of the unaccountables? Now, Marie Antoinette was just one woman, but you have three there, one who recently worked in the White House. laughing at the primary concern, as per polling, of the individuals in the state she lives in voting for Donald Trump. Just laughing at it. Yes. Immigration.
Right, because it doesn't affect them. I mean, look at the disproportionate impact putting the undocumented workers, if you will, in Martha's Vineyard. Suddenly it affected them, right? The sending of busloads of undocumented migrants to New York City, right? Suddenly it affected them. But before it did, while they remained insulated, they would mock those rather than have empathy.
But then they activate the National Guard to get them off Martha's Vineyard.
Funny.
You said something fascinating.
Not out of Massachusetts, just Martha's Vineyard.
Just Martha's Vineyard, yes. You said something very interesting about these people don't seem to learn. Can you break down just how deep that is? Because I look at the last 2 years and I see this fascinating phenomena where those who want to prevent President Trump's return persist in using tools that make him more popular. First, you have the Alvin Bragg prosecution. His popularity increases. Then you have the documents case. Then you have the Colorado. Then on and on. Every single instance, there's a huge bump in popularity, more fundraising for the person being attacked. How is there such an a-strategic approach that they, at some point, a rational person says, maybe we should stop doing this?
Well, one thing that's going on here is they cannot look outside the bubble of their upper middle class world. And so if you are a professional or work for a professional and you live in one of those nice leafy suburbs and you have a six-figure income and so on, the worst thing that could happen to you is to be accused, falsely or not, to be accused of something. You never recover from that reputational damage. However, a large section of America has had encounters with the law enforcement system. And so have their friends. So to be accused in that web is to say, oh, you know, bad luck, you know, John got some of this thrown on him. And it's not the permanent mark. So they are making their class analysis, right, their outlook as from, they only have experience of other college-educated, high-income people like themselves. For them, it would be devastating. Right. But for the people who, you know, I mean, there are arrests for people who fail to show up in court because the letter never arrives telling them the court date, right? There are many ordinary citizens are now sucked into the maw of very low level, the equivalent of speeding tickets, into the law, legal system. And they're learning through their direct experience, this is a broken system that isn't particularly interested in truth and innocence or guilt. And these people are parents and their teenage sons have or daughters have gotten into trouble with the law. And they look at the system much more skeptically. Then you add the Trump indictments.
Yeah.
And they just don't understand that most of America is not like them. They are not considered a permanent
blemish
that makes them unqualified. They say, oh, wow, it happened to him too.
Does that mean that those who are laughing about the Virginia voters, is there simply a lack of empathy with their fellow American? Is it a lack of empathy?
Yes. And this we see this at the end of every late stage aristocracy, that they have become so used to their position that they think they have a right to it and they are immune. And so, of course, they mock the little people that they can barely see from the tower of their privilege.
Let them eat cake.
Yes.
We talked to Rich Miniter, CEO of Zenga News, Zenga.news. I'm Sebastian Gorka, former deputy and strategist to the 45th, and God willing, if we do our part, the 47th president of the United States. We're coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios, just outside the insalubrious, fetid, rank, malodorous, noisome, and ghastly swamp that is Washington, D.C. Relief Factor's latest product. I've been their guinea pig for 6 months, and I'm so excited to reveal to you Relief Factor Sleep. What is health about? Yes, you've got to exercise, you've got to eat well, but what happens when you don't sleep right or get a deep restorative sleep? It affects you in all kinds of ways, physical health, mental health. If you have trouble getting to sleep at night, then try this product, which has led to my wife, who gets up before the cock crows, to staying in bed till 7 a.m. That's shocking. My wife, Katie, is usually up at like 4:30. I take it as well, and I wake up in the morning, and I'm not drowsy. That's the beauty of this natural sleep aid. Find out for yourself, relieffactor.com/sleep, or call them up. I think you know the number. 1-800-4-RELIEF, relieffactor.com/sleep. That's 1-800-473-5433, relieffactor.com/sleep. Our God-given freedoms are facing unrelenting attacks. It's a battle for truth, and the only way we win is if we stand together. Thankfully, the Alliance Defending Freedom has been defending our rights for 30 years and winning. Right now, they're involved in two critical cases before the Supreme Court. They're suing the FDA for endangering the health and safety of women and girls, and in the second case, they're assisting the state of Idaho to defend its law protecting the lives of women and their unborn children against the Biden administration's attempt to override the law and force doctors to perform abortions. And they need your help. With your best gift, you courageously join ADF in fighting critical Supreme Court cases against government lawlessness and help defend our cherished freedoms. Call 855-374-4767 right now, or go to sebgorka.com and click on the ADF banner. With your help, I've pledged to raise $35,000 by March 31st for ADF. Go to sebgorka.com or call 855-374-4767 to make your best gift right now. I know with your help, we can beat that goal and help make a generational difference for freedom.
Too much of what's happening in our country today is not normal. Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans represent an extremism that threatens the very foundations of our republic.
To have, of whatever party, an incumbent chief executive basically call half the voting population extremists.
It's strange. If you expect that the election is going to be competitive,
right,
and votes at the margin really matter, you don't go looking for heretics, you go looking for converts.
Yeah, right.
But also, let's think about the Marines in the background of that video.
Yes, and the red tint.
Well, there's that. That's the aesthetics. And I thought we could dissect that too. But the Marines who are forced to stand there are an example of accountable people.
Right.
Right? They are following orders. They're literally wearing the uniform of the day, standing in a particular way. And no matter what the president says or stands for, they have to stand there and appear to show their allegiance. By the way, using uniformed military for political purposes is something that's not done. It's okay to have a uniformed person at a funeral, especially for someone who is a hero to the nation in combat or in life. It's okay to have something, the use of people in military uniforms, for things that are so well established as apolitical, such as the Toys for Tots campaign.
Right, or the Marine Corps birthday.
The Marine Corps birthday is another one. Or urging, this happened in a prior presidency, urging children to read. Right, these are things that are apolitical. But if you ever invest the military in any political position, that means that people who are opposed to that political position becomes opposed to the military.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen the results of the politicization of the military in South America. And that's not something that any thinking person would want here.
And it doesn't make a lot of strategic sense if, as you said, you're not just the commander-in-chief, but you want to be reelected. Right? The State of the Union shouting about half the population when you're 8 months away from an election seems kind of astrategic.
Right. If you believe that you have the right to a large swath of the electorate's vote,
yeah,
automatically, as a right, then all you have to do is scare them to get in line, and so the machine works. That is a deeply cynical view of America. And what happens when the distrust becomes so intense that the people who have to live in the real world say, well, hold on, gas and food prices are getting higher and higher. There is a shortage of workers at my job, so I'm having to work longer than before. It's impossible for younger people to find a home or to get out of debt because of all the student loan debt. Why aren't the people who are making decisions thinking about lives like mine? That's the kind of thing that I come across again and again in my interviews trying to understand American politics today. And it's just a very, the Biden script is so clearly not working.
Yeah.
And a Democrat of the 1950s or 60s would see this
in a heartbeat
immediately, right? The first thing to do is listen.
Yeah.
Right? And we're all in it together is a kind of approach that has traditionally worked for this party. The fact that you're getting an arrogant lecture about democracy is itself a form of putting your fingers in your ears and going, yeah, 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 yeah. It's a two-year-old response. There's no longer enough people in that White House who are able to think intelligently about the changes in American opinion. They're also missing an important thing. COVID shattered the trust of a lot of people in Americans.
Across the political spectrum.
Yes.
Right.
Right, because for African Americans of a certain age, they absolutely remember the Tuskegee experiments, which for decades they were given a drug that the doctors knew was worthless in order to track the deadly course of their syphilis.
Right.
And that still has a powerful effect on the African Americans' distrust of the medical system.
Right.
And then you add COVID to it. And for a lot of the mask resistance, especially in the big cities, initially came from African Americans who said, wait a minute, this looks like a Tuskegee thing all over again. And then it spread. And that is something, this is a core, and has been for decades, a core Democratic Party constituency. When it becomes skeptical and distrustful, and the COVID response reminds them of something very painful that came to light in the 1970s, that should have been a five-alarm fire. At that point, they should have said, if we do not maintain the fraying edges of our coalition, we will have nothing left.
And instead, they double down. We're talking to Rich Miniter, groundbreaking former investigative journalist for the likes of the Sunday Times, editorial writer for the Wall Street Journal in Europe, so much more. Now it's CEO of Zenga News, Zenga.news. Let me just switch azimuth for a second because of your storied media past and because of what we were discussing previously. We are in a radio studio. We're talking to about 3.5 million people live, and then we have all the other podcasts. Can you talk to me about those who say radio is dead or dying? Because I don't buy it for a millisecond, Rich.
I don't either. I mean, well, first of all, there are many people who have the radio on while they work.
Yeah.
And when was the last time you had your oil changed and there wasn't a radio playing in the background or a construction site? Or if you're working in the back of the dirty corner of a restaurant and you're washing a lot of dishes, yes, some people might be listening to podcasts, have their headphones on, but the radio or audio in general, this is a primary way of how humans have transmitted information since the days of Homer and the Iliad. We get information from other people through the spoken word.
And the uniqueness of radio for breaking news and live news. I mean, podcasts are burgeoning, but radio's live.
Radio's live and alive.
Right.
But also, it's not just, it's the experience of a conversation, which is so fundamentally human. Mm-hmm. Also, I think the kinds of people who say radio are dead mean that the Soros-funded radio project or Air America or various center-left attempts to go into radio have failed, and therefore radio is dead.
Uh-huh.
But that's just, they're not looking at the whole picture. The reason why it's so hard for a liberal broadcaster to make it on radio is not that the radio audience is unwilling to listen. In fact, you'll find radio listeners want to hear opposing points of view. It's that that audience is already served by the taxpayers, NPR, funded by public universities with their broadcast stations. And, of course, some of the major networks serve that audience as well. So the competition, the space is crowded and competitive. On the right, you see radio has taken off because it provides information, interviews, experiences that are just not available elsewhere.
Yeah,
I think it's like a good conversation.
But I think that's the key thing. It's that conversational aspect that is unique to the medium. We're talking to Rich Miniter one-on-one. I'm Sebastian Gorka, coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Relief Factor works. There's a reason more than a million Americans are taking it right now, me included. Yes, I had a lower back pain issue that plagued me for 9 years, almost a decade. I took Relief Factor, and then 2 weeks later, I was pain-free. And as of this January, I've been pain-free for 5 years. You should find out if you could be the next success story. It's very easy. All you do is you order the 3-week quick starter pack at relieffactor.com. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening like I do. And I promise you, Dr. G's guarantee, by the end of the 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you, like it works for me and over a million of your fellow Americans. Ask yourself one very simple question. What do you have to lose? If the only answer to that question is the pain, well, then you know what to do. Write this number down. 1-800, the number for relief, or go to relieffactor.com today. That's 1-800-473-5433, relieffactor.com. Did you know that 84% of New Year's resolutions fail in the first 6 weeks? That's got me thinking about PhD weight loss and nutrition and why it was a success for me. Why I haven't gained 1 pound of my 42-pound weight loss back. Why Jeff, my producer, decided to start the program. Most people blame their failure on a lack of time, motivation, and a loss of zeal. PhD makes it simple. It doesn't take a lot of extra time. They are masters of motivation. You have a team of coaches by your side the whole time, and you don't lose your zeal because every week you make great strides, so you stay excited. Do something different this year and call PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition, 864-644-1900. To get started, or online at myphdweightloss.com. Don't do this alone. The number, 864-644-1900, myphdweightloss.com. We only have a couple of minutes left. Of course, this has whizzed by far too quickly. Last question, very different from the ones I've posed before. You and I have been helping to mentor a young man, a very intelligent young man. You have a wealth of experience, and I'd like to tap on that for a second. For those whose sons or daughters might be listening right now, career advice. One thing I say to those who are in their 20s and asking for career advice, I don't care whether you want to be a brain surgeon or a rocket scientist, do one thing. Put your cell phone down for an hour or two every day and pick up a book, preferably written by a dead old white guy at least a few hundred years ago. Start with that. Rich, is there anything universal or general that you give as advice? Because I know you've got employees who you are nurturing. Give us a bon mot.
Yeah, well, Zenger, in fact, has over 5,000 correspondents in 120 countries. When I give graduation speeches, the thing that I say that always makes people gasp is that you're after graduation, you should attempt to read 200 books a year. And after they gasp, I say, there are 365 nights in the year. You will be going to bed. You could be watching the television, or you could be reading. If you spent half an hour a day in bed, reading yourself to sleep,
right.
First of all, you're not disturbing your wife. But secondly, your mind is growing, and these ideas will develop in you as you sleep. I'm not saying it's magical, but there is something great about consistent, regular habits. But more bullet-pointed advice, other than reading quality books on a consistent basis, forcing it, you want your values to be reflected in your calendar, in your schedule. So what you repeatedly schedule is who you become. So schedule the reading time, schedule the running and weightlifting time too, obviously, and put it at parts of your day that cannot be interrupted by emergency events, because all lives, especially young lives, are full of emergencies. But I would say a couple of things. One is learn some real skills. That is to say, you should, of course, you're going to learn how to use Microsoft Word. Learn how to use a word processing program, learn how to use Excel or a spreadsheet program, and learn how to make slides using PowerPoint or one of those tools. Those three things will allow you to work in any office in the developed world. They will also guide your thinking in how to design and plan projects. And as a young person, the most important project you have is your future, your life. Think of it as a project. Imagine there are two of you, and one of you has hired the other as a consultant. What would you advise yourself? Well, you have to impress the client. And that means there has to be documents and presentations. And before that, there has to be thoughts. So think about designing your life as if you were a consultant to yourself. And to do that, you need certain basic planning tools. Learn those skills. If you read quality works, nonfiction, some fiction, consistently, you will become a better writer. You'll become a better reader, of course. And there is a process called learning by writing, where you really can learn a subject, not only after you've read it, but you start to write it and outline your thoughts.
Summarize it.
Right. And that's when you own those ideas and make them your own. Anyone who can read music can play in front of sheet music. But the people who really know have played that song so much that they've made it their own and they're playing without looking at the sheet music.
Bingo.
And that's the way you want to own ideas. You want them to be yours. They want them to develop through experience. But the three big questions every young person has is, who am I? What am I going to do with my life for money? And who am I going to spend this life with? And those questions have been asked throughout time. Look at how other people and other points in time answered those questions. Learn from their examples. Not to say you could copy their lives, but they might present you with a wider range of possibilities or ways of thinking about possibilities, which will help you choose the right path in life for you.
Yeah, you're not the first person to try and plan their life, but manage it. Be the project manager for your life. There's a reason our guest has the intellect he does, because he actually reads hundreds of books every year. I can vouch for that, given the hours we have spent over a good cigar discussing what he has gleaned from them. He is now the CEO of Zenga News, Zenga.news. Any book with his name on the spine is worth your time. Start with Losing Bin Laden. You've been listening to America First One-on-One. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, keep your head on a swivel. Watch your six. Hold the line. Never give up. Never give in. And stay frosty.
Our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
I have a dream. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people... And the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
Why is it seemingly that this administration, including Chuck Schumer in the Senate, hate the man that Israel chose as their prime minister? Why do the Democrats hate Bibi Netanyahu?
I actually think they hate Israel.
Yes.
I don't think they hate him. I think they hate Israel. And the Democrat Party hates Israel. And the Democrat Party, if you remember, when many Israeli representatives, including Netanyahu, when they came to the country trying, begging, at that time President Obama, please don't make the Iran nuclear deal, which is a disaster and was a disaster. And I ended it. But unfortunately, they didn't do anything with the ending of it. I ended it and would have had a new deal made with Iran. It would have been good for everybody, and there would have been no nuclear weapons. You know, they're very close to getting a nuclear weapon right now.
Yes.
And once they have that, it becomes a different form of negotiation, a much more difficult negotiation. But I really believe they hate Israel, and they also see a lot of votes. Don't forget, when you see those Palestinian marches, even I'm amazed at how many people are in those marches. And guys like Schumer see that, And to him, it's votes. I think it's votes more than anything else, because he was always pro-Israel. He's very anti-Israel now. Any Jewish person that votes for Democrats hates their religion. They hate everything about Israel, and they should be ashamed of themselves, because Israel will be destroyed.
That made a bit of news, didn't it? It's good to be back. Thank you to Congressman, former Congressman Doug Collins, who sat in this very chair yesterday, who was in the swamp, and he did a rather good job guest hosting, and he had to discuss the reverberations of our hour-long interview with President Trump on Monday. Jeff, how did he do? How did the congressman do yesterday? Do you find it weird that I'm traveling on business and then I'm listening to the show and then I tell you, can I be on my own show while Doug's hosting?
I was about to say, why are you asking? You came on for 30 minutes and I'm sure you listened to the intro too, because you were just getting off the plane. You listened to at least half the show, I'm sure.
Is that bad?
No, it's good.
Okay, all right. Now, talk to me. Let's get Jeff back for a second. Talk to me about the interview that we did with the president for an hour, because have we had within 24 hours, I think I sent the headlines to Eric, the New York Times, the Washington Post, NPR, Politico, and the Daily Mail run stories about our humble little show, Jeff. Has that happened before?
And not to mention Morning Joe talked about it over and over and over again yesterday. Yes, they did. They brought it up three different times. He's calling Trump an anti-Semite, all this type of stuff. Then the best part, today he did another interview where Trump said that he would let BB do whatever he wants. So now they're ripping him for that.
Okay. When we get those stories, we'll show them to you just in case you don't believe me. So, as they say in, I think, is it politics or media? What's the hoary old phrase? All exposure is good exposure. All news is good news. Well, in that case, we got a lot of it. We got the Washington Post. Trump says Jewish Democrats hate their religion and Israel. On and on it went. The New York Times. Trump says Jews who support Democrats hate Israel and their religion. On and on it went. The Times of Israel. Trump, Jews who vote for Democrats hate their religion, hate everything about Israel. Now, what's incorrect about that? Hey, Eric, help me out. What's wrong with what the president said? I mean, just like empirically, so scientifically.
There's nothing wrong with what he said. And as you pointed out, he, if anything, said the opposite of the whole Jews with dual loyalty, you know, smear. He right. said, you know, that they clearly have no loyalty to Israel. They vote for the Democrats right. who are anti-Israel at this point.
So let's unpack this for a second, because except for maybe the Mail, which probably covered it fairly, the accusation was Donald Trump is using the old anti-Semitic smear of dual loyalty. Now, you have to know what that means, right? Dual loyalty. That's not very 21st century. It actually applies to lots of ethnicities. If you're old enough, you remember JFK as a Catholic of an Irish family was attacked almost continuously before he became president, even after he was elected, for his potential dual loyalty as an Irish Catholic. A loyalty to whom? Alex, are you there? Who could a Catholic president be loyal to except the U.S. Constitution?
The Pope and the Vatican?
Yes! Give that man a cigar. Yes, the accusation. If you're a Catholic American, you're going to be working for the Pope. So whether it's Jewish Americans who are loyal to Israel and America or have a split loyalty, or whether it's Catholics, this dual loyalty thing is a, you know, racist slur. But what did the president say? What did the president say? He said, if you're a Jewish American and you vote for the Democrats, you hate religion, your religion, and you hate Israel. He's actually saying the opposite. He says, you have no loyalty to the people of Israel because the Democrats hate Israel. They are the institutionalized anti-Semitic party of America. Don't ask me, ask Chuck Schumer, ask Joe Biden, ask Rashida Tlaib, ask Ilhan Omar. Can I just go through a little bit of evidence? Oh, let's start with the State of the Union. What did Joe Biden say on a hot mic just before he took the podium? He said, BB needs to have a counter Jesus moment. Oh, that's weird, because he's a Jew.
Why would a Jewish prime minister have to have a come to Jesus moment? Then Chuck Schumer says last week, Israel has to get rid of Bibi Netanyahu. What an anti-Semite you are. I don't care if you happen to be Jewish, Chuck. Israel chose their prime minister. Who the hell are you to say they have to jettison him? I mean, is that election interference or what? And is it anti-Semitic? Yes. Or let's talk about the other most senior Democrat. That's the Senate. Let's go back to Joe Biden in the White House. What has he done in the last 3 years? Released billions, tens of billions of dollars. To whom? To Iran, the sworn theocratic Islamic enemy of Israel that wishes to destroy Israel. Push it into the sea. Why would you do that if you like Jews? Only an anti-Semite would do that. Let's talk about the lower house of Congress. Let's talk about the squad. Let's talk about AOC, a proud, to this day, proud member of the BDS, Boycott, Divest, Sanction movement, which is modern anti-Semitism, boycott Israel. She is a proud BDS supporter. Or how about Rashida Tlaib, who on her map, in her office in Congress, put a post-it note over the state of Israel and wrote Palestine. Oh, and actually publicly wore a t-shirt with a map of the Middle East denying, deleting the existence of Israel and putting Palestine over it. Oh, or how about the other squad member? You remember her? Some people did something. Ilhan Omar, who said what? For Jews, politics is all about the Benjamins. Wow, what a stinking racist. What an anti-Semite. For Jews, it's all about the Benjamins. We know where the racists are. They're inside the Democrat Party. They're inside the Democrats of the Senate. They're inside the White House. President Trump, the most philo-Semitic pro-Israel president since the rebirth in 1948. The first president in 23 years to move the embassy to recognize Jerusalem. Oh, and by the way, his son-in-law and his daughter worked in the White House as Jews. So keep spinning the gaslighting, because we've got your number. So much to talk about. An amazing third hour deep dive guest. Don't miss it. Subscribe to the podcast, whichever platform you prefer. Plug in my name. Leave us a 5-star review. And if you want sanity back, if you don't want stinking anti-Semites in the White House, fly the flag that says I stand with 45. Get yours today, along with the most important t-shirt. Say her name, Laken Riley, SebGorkaStore.com. And support the president at DonaldJTrump.com. We've only just begun. Stay on this channel.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.